Okay, we're in Parshas Noach. We didn't learn for a few weeks. So we're going to start Perek Tes, chapter 9, on page 40. The last thing we learned a while back was that Hashem said, I'm not going to curse the world anymore because people are born bad. And we learned the contrast before the flood. Hashem said the same logic, people are born bad. But over there, I looked at it with a negative eye, and therefore Hashem said, therefore I'm going to destroy the world. And after the flood, after Hashem smelled the smell of the carbon, so then Hashem said, well, it's not their fault when they're bad, so therefore I won't destroy the world anymore. Okay? So it says like this, Ve'ivarech alikim es Noach v'zbonav, Hashem blessed Noach and his children. Ve'yem alahem, and he said to them, Pru urvu, be fruitful, multiply, umila sa'oretz, and fill up the world. And the commentators explain, Hashem said that to Adam Arishin. So what's Hashem saying again to Ad Noach? Be fruitful, me multiply. So Rashi quotes from the Medrash that the first time was a bracha, you should be fruitful, multiply. And now was actually what Hashem's demanding from them. Pnu Urvu was a commandment because the world had to become repopulated. There's nobody left, 9 people in the whole world. So Hashem said, Hashem said, you have to fill the world. Okay?
Is that the first mitzvah? Or the
yes.
First commandment?
It is the first commandment.
Okay, the reason I ask that is because I know that's the general knowledge, but someone said that saying Kiddush Levana is the first commandment or something like that?
No, not Kiddush Levana. The first mitzvah Jews were given to as Jews was the mitzvah of sanctifying the months in Egypt. Okay, but generally speaking, universally to the Jews and to Goyim, the first mitzvah in the Torah is called Pru Urvu, be fruitful, multiply. But that's to the general public. This was the first mitzvah Jews were given as a Jewish nation when they were still in Egypt. Okay, so it says, the door's not locked, is it?
I think so.
Huh?
It's partially open.
Okay, good. Umerachem v'chitchem yihia, and yifidi, again, these psukim we learned a while ago. I mean, last time. Umerachem v'chitchem yihia kol chaya so'oretz, and the fear of you, and you, and it shall be about every beast of the earth. And like we said, there's an image of God on the person. Animals see it, like we said, Daniel and the lions. Then it wasn't a miracle, the Zohar says. It was just simple nature. Daniel was a tzaddik. The image of God stayed on his face. It didn't get wiped off through sins. And therefore, animals were afraid of him. Every beast and every bird. Anything that crawls on the ground. Any fish of the ocean, b'yatchem nitonu, are given to you. That means now you're able to eat whatever you want. Before the flood, they were forbidden to eat meat. Now Hashem says, koremes ashehu chai, any living creature, okay, that has blood in it, lachem yia la'ochel, you could eat. Any living creature you could eat. What?
Not every living.
Well, for the goyim, this is Noach didn't have the Torah yet. Again, now he's permitting them to eat every living creature that works. Kiyarek Esav, like the grass of the field. Nosati lochem es kol, I'm giving you everything. Okay? So he says, why? Because Hashem saw that Noach worked hard in the teva. So to reward him, Hashem is giving him, basically, that he can now eat all the animals of the fish and everything else. Now, all the fish of the sea. Okay. B'yatchem nitan, you could do whatever you wish. You have the mastery over it. Okay? Now, this is the permission that Hashem gave that they can eat meat. Well, Adam is not there for, and by the way, it's coming up with the seventh Noahite law. Like we learned, Adam Arishin was given 6 mitzvahs. Like you said, the 7 Noahite laws, or in Hebrew, Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, are called so because Noach was given 7 mitzvahs. But the question, why aren't they called Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Adam? because the truth is, Adam Rishon was given the mitzvahs. So the explanation is, the commentators say, because Adam Rishon was only given 6 mitzvahs. Eva Menachai, not eating a live limb off an animal, wasn't given to Adam because we're not allowed to eat meat, period. So you can't say, okay, you can't eat a live limb off an animal. They couldn't eat even a dead limb off an animal. So therefore, the 7th mitzvah that we're going to learn in a second, we're going to explain it, that was given to Noach. So therefore, they're called Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach versus then Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Adam, even though it means all mankind. Okay, there could be food. Like the grass of the field, I gave it to you. You can eat it any way you want. Okay, you have the same right as it is to eat it. Okay. Now this is what we're really up to. Achbase benafshi dama leisechel. But flesh with its soul, its blood, you should not eat. This is the mitzvah. He says you cannot tear a live limb off an animal, which by the way, Eva Menachai, eating a live limb off an animal, it's not allowed to rip off a limb from an animal and eat it. Why? Because of cruelty to animals. And it's interesting. This 7th Noahite law of what's called Eva Menachai doesn't only mean not eating a live limb off an animal, which even Goyim have to keep. What it means is, you can't be cruel to animals. It's biblically forbidden to be cruel to animals. So anything that causes cruelty to animals, unless if it's for the sake of humans, like experiments and for medicine or things like that, but entertainment in a way that animals will be tortured is biblically forbidden. So rodeos, bullfights, all those types of things are biblically forbidden according to Torah.
Sport fishing?
Sport fishing, you throw the fish back in though.
No.
You want to plug it? Here's the plug.
Oh, thank you.
No, like, you know, they put the fish up on the wall, you know, they stuff it.
Yeah, but that's again for the benefit of mankind.
It's,
yeah. But stop, it's not real torture for them. You're taking the fish and... I mean, there's a whole Indian fur coats, I mean, all that. According to Halacha, not getting into the emotional aspect of it. According to Halacha, wearing a mink coat, wearing a shtreimel, which is fur, is allowed. Because it's for the benefit of mankind. Animals were created for mankind, not like today's society, people were created to serve animals. But Eva Menachai, by the way, we'll soon see, it refers to any types of things. In other words, the flesh and the blood are not allowed to be taken from a live, living animal, according to Rashi. A non-Jew is allowed to eat blood. In fact, in the time of the Chumash, the Torah says, Chazak, you have to strengthen yourself not to eat blood. And Rashi says, why is the Torah saying, strengthen yourself not to eat blood? Because the people, Shtufi Bedamim Hayu, they were indulged in eating blood. That was the barbaric civilization in biblical times. And people were into drinking blood, and therefore the Torah says, it's forbidden, you have to strengthen yourself not to eat blood. But technically a guy can eat blood. Okay? Now, we have to do it, but another interesting thing, there's a rule that Rambam says, this that a Jew keeps mitzvahs is not because Hashem told Noach or Hashem told Adam. Rambam says clearly, even the 7 Noahite laws, that Jews are not different than goyim, they also have to keep it. But a Jew keeps mitzvahs only because Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai that you have to keep the mitzvahs. Whatever, even let's say Bris Milah, right? Hashem told Avraham Avinu to do a Bris. Bottom line is, we don't do Bris because Rambam says, because Avraham Avinu did a Bris. We do a Bris because after Matan Torah, Hashem said, B'yayim HaShmini, on the 8th day, you have to do a Bris. So even though these mitzvahs were given to Noach and the Adam, nevertheless, we don't do it for that reason. Okay? Now, next is a very, very interesting, controversial pasuk, by the way. V'achas dimchem l'nafshi seichem. However, your blood, which belongs to your souls, edresh, I will demand miyad ko chayad rishano, I'll demand it from every beast, or miyad, I'll tell you exactly what the pasuk means in a minute. Or miyad adam for every man, miyad ish achiv, edrish is nefesh adam. Whoever sheds blood, I'm sorry, I will demand the soul of man. Okay? Meaning like this. Hashem says, even though you're allowed to kill animals, but you're not allowed to kill people. Hashem says, and that's what he says, ach, even though you're allowed to eat animals, but you can't live, eat a limb or blood from a living animal, but Hashem says, people, you're not allowed to kill. And Hashem said, I will seek out the blood of a person who kills another person. And this is the whole controversy about suicide, by the way. And we'll get into a discussion in a minute about it. Okay. Now, Hashem says, basically, your own lives you cannot take. And not only that, but he says, Edrish, I will avenge it, meaning, if somebody kills somebody, and there are no witnesses to testify it, and the guy wasn't brought to court, to judgment, Hashem will kill him. Hashem says, Rashi brings it down, Valakim ino liyodi. Rashi says in later in Mishpat, with last week's Pasha, 2 weeks ago now, it says like this, if a guy kills somebody intentionally, and wasn't brought to judgment because no witnesses, right? What's going to happen? One day he's going to be sitting at the bottom of a ladder. A guy on top of the ladder is going to fall down on top of him and kill him. So that the guy that killed somebody intentionally is going to get killed anyway. And that person has to run the city of refuge, Ani Miklat. But the guy that killed somebody, it says, Hashem says, I will demand it. Okay? And animals were warned they are not to exercise this dominion. One who turns another over to be killed by wild beasts is also a murderer. In other words, that's what the Torah says, Miyat ko chayad rishano. The Torah is saying a whole bunch of things in this pasuk. Okay, because it doesn't read well, so to speak, the pasuk.
I already have 9 questions.
Okay, good. So let's first see what he says here, and then we'll talk about it. Every animal that kills a person will be put to death. The din is an axe. In 2 weeks ago, Mishpatim, an axe kills a person. You kill the axe. You stone the axe. It's called the Shoreh Nitzkum. Rashi brings down from the Gemara. Why should the animal? There's no free choice. Animal doesn't know what he's doing. He runs on instinct. It's not that he has free choice to choose good and bad. An animal didn't sit down and have a meeting. Okay, it's bad to kill a human, but I'm going to do it anyway. So why are you killing the animal? So Rashi says from the Gemara, the animal doesn't deserve to die. It didn't do anything wrong. It doesn't have free will. But because a person was killed through it, you kill the animal. If somebody puts a person in front of a wild beast, the Torah says that person is called a murderer, that person is going to get killed, and the beast is going to get killed for killing the person. Again, even though there's no free will, or whatever it is. Okay? Now, it also refers to if you hire somebody to kill somebody. So you didn't even do it. And normally there's a rule, Ein Shaliach L'Dvar Aveda. There's no proxy, there's no agent when it comes to do a sin. If I tell you, go steal, or go kill, or go do anything. Like this, normally, if I send a shliach, it's like, I did it. Right? The agent is like, I did it. But not by a sin. And the Gemara says even a logic for it. They also learn that from Sukkim. What's the logic? The expression in the Gemara is, Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mishaymin. The Rebbe says one thing, the student says something else. Who are you supposed to listen to? God says, don't kill him. This yukol tells you, go kill him. Who are you supposed to listen to? Hashem or the yukol? Right? So the guy that sent him could say, listen, he's not supposed to listen to me. He's supposed to listen to God. He didn't listen to God. He deserves to die. But Bezdin can't kill him. Beis Din can kill the guy that killed somebody. But the guy that sent him, see, in civil law, you can kill him. Hashem says, I will kill him. I will take care of him. I will punish him in a way that he will die. Hashem says, I will take care of it. Okay. Miyat ish achiv, the hand of every man of his brother, meaning, he says, if he was done accidentally, like he fell down on the, off the ladder, whatever, and he killed somebody, so then he will still be, go to Golos, he still has to go into the Arimik, the city of refuge. Okay, but now, this prosik.
Isn't that a little harsh? It's the ladder's faulty, it's broken, it's windy, it's this and that. He kills someone, he still has to go leave. It's an accident. We all know there's no such thing as an accident. Everything is...
There's a expression in the Gemara, Megalgal and Schus, Aydei Zakai, V'cheva Aydei Cheva. Good things through come through good people. Bad things come through bad people. There is a question Chassidus asks. A guy did a sin accident. Okay, I understand. I did a sin intentionally. Any sin would matter. Okay, I'm guilty because I knew it was wrong and I did it. Yeah? A guy eats certain fats of an animal. He didn't know what it was. He thought it was kosher. He eats it accidentally. He has to bring a sin offering. Why? What did he do? I mean, a guy desecrated Shabbos accidentally. He didn't know you're not allowed to, and he did it. I mean, why is he to blame? A guy kills somebody. Your example. A guy falls down from a ladder, and his best friend, you know, mamish, a total accident, and he has to run to the refuge and stay there until the Kohen Gadol dies. So the answer is like this. There's a pasuk that says, Lo yo'una letzadeh kol oven. God doesn't allow terrible sins to come through a tzaddik. Okay, some Paschim says it's only by eating. If this person that killed somebody accidentally, yeah, would have no connection in any way whatsoever to murder, Hashem would have never allowed a murder to happen through him. Hashem wouldn't allow it. The fact that Hashem allowed, he granted accidentally, the fact that Hashem allowed a murder to happen through this person shows that the person needs forgiveness because he does have some connection to murder, because if he had no connection to murder whatsoever, Hashem would have never allowed that to happen. Huh?
That's
powerful.
Yeah.
Now, you have to understand, connection to murder can be in a lot of ways. Embarrassing somebody publicly is like murdering them. Taking away his livelihood is like murdering them. There's a lot of things that the Torah compares to murder. That means the person can do those things. He has a connection to the concept of murder. He's not a murderer. But there's a connection there to murder. And therefore Hashem will allow a terrible thing like murder to happen through them. Because if they didn't have any connection to murder whatsoever, it was totally out of their league, Hashem wouldn't have allowed it to happen. And therefore, they need kapara. They need forgiveness. If a guy had no connection, in other words, if a guy was very meticulous in kashrus, Hashem would never allow him to accidentally eat trade for meat that he shouldn't have eaten. Hashem just wouldn't make it happen. The fact that he's lax in kashrus, so Hashem will make it happen that he should learn to be more meticulous in kashrus, or what, any Shabbos, or any other sin.
Rabbi,
what?
That you bring with someone kills someone, God is going to kill them, and it's going to happen with the ladder. The ladder thing is just an example of one way that it can happen?
Yes, one way. By the way, the Gemara also learns out from these psukim, because when it says about taking the life of a person from another person, is when you're supposed to live in peace. But this does not, the Rambam says, the Mefashim, man is punished for murder only when he is required to live in tranquility. However, during a time of war, these restrictions do not apply. Because the world was so organized from its beginning, that war, you kill people. Soldiers that kill people in the war are not called murderers. It's self-defense. You kill somebody in self-defense, it's not a murderer.
What if he's a sniper and he kills the wrong person?
Wrong person as far as who is concerned. The wrong person he killed, yeah? Was he supposed to die?
He's not a good sniper, then.
No, but you look at it, you know, there's hundreds of cases where you kill your own people on your own side, even.
Mistake. Yeah, okay.
Friendly
fire, obviously. But the question is, did that person that was killed, was he supposed to die?
Yes.
Yes.
He accidentally killed someone in...
Maybe because he killed somebody intentionally somewhere. Maybe his time came.
Even in different...
Maybe his time came to go.
But is the sniper guilty now?
Yeah.
Or is he innocent?
He's guilty. It's a machlekes in the Mishnah, by the way, in Sanhedrin. But the halacha is he's chayiv. Even though he didn't kill the person he wanted to kill. One opinion says, if you don't kill the person you want to kill... So it's called accidental murder. Because that wasn't the guy you wanted to kill. So you can't put him to death. But the halacha is no, because you intended to kill. You intended to do a capital punishment crime. So it's A instead of B, who cares? You wanted to kill somebody intentionally, and you did. There's a very interesting story in the Gemara. The Gemara tells a story, like, don't ask me what the Gemara means, but there's a story in the Gemara. Hashem sent the angel of death to get a lady called Miriam. To bring her back up, you know. By mistake, there were two Miriams. He brought the wrong one. So the Gemara says, one was a launderer, one was a different job, whatever. Not money laundering. I mean, you know, clothing. So the wrong Miriam comes up, and they see it's the wrong one. So they said, should we bring her back? Chis HaMesim, you know? So Hashem said, no, she's here already, let her stay and get the other one.
Rabbi, with all due respect.
That's the story in the Gemara. He said, don't ask me what it means. But there is such a story in the Gemara. Now, obviously, it's not a mistake. Okay? If somebody says, I killed the wrong person, that's what you think. You think because you wanted to kill A and you killed B. But in Hashem's mind, there was no mistake. B was supposed to die. So B was killed.
So now, does he have to do teshuvah or does he have
Of course he has to do teshuvah. He killed somebody.
But not if he's a soldier in war.
No, in soldier in war.
Soldier in the war is a sniper. It's his job.
To kill people. Yeah, but that's what he's learning from this psukim. It's only in peaceful time. In wartime, you can kill.
But now they have war crimes, you know, where...
War crimes when they were not for the, like, war... killing innocent civilians is an agreement that in wartime, all the nations from the beginning of creation said, you don't kill women and children. That was so that's not the war set up. Then they're going against it. Then they're killing innocent people. The war crimes basically not killing soldiers. The war crimes were killing innocent people, civilians. That's a different story. That's murder. That's 100% murder.
So in Israel, you know, there's bombs going back and forth in Gaza, and we go after terrorists.
But if you notice, the Israelis always send leaflets and let the civilians get out. They don't listen. So then you have to kill them. But you're giving them the chance. The Arabs don't do that.
No, the Arabs put the people specifically in
that. No, I'm saying when the Arabs bomb Israel, they don't say get rid of the kids. They don't say get rid of the kids. But the Jewish people that have this morality to them, they don't do it. And it's allowed to be done. Okay, then it says like this. Shefeach dam ha'adam, whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, Ki betzalem alakim asa sa'adam, because in the image of Hashem, Hashem made man. Okay? Simply means there would be no witnesses and no nothing like that. Okay. So now the Gemara also learns out by this, okay, the concept of suicide. And the pasuk shefer dam ha'adam, ba'adam, means you're not allowed to kill a person, including yourself. There's a din in Torah that's called ma'abed atzmei ladas. If a person kills himself knowingly, in full mental functioning, a guy commits suicide. By the way, it's interesting. He has no chelak in olam haba. You're not allowed to bury him in a Jewish cemetery. There's no kaddish. There's no yard site. There's no kaddish. There's no nothing. Okay? In a practical sense, today nobody rules like that. Why? Because whenever somebody is going to kill themselves in today's world, it's because they have mental issues. Either a tragedy happened, they lost money, whatever happened, a tragedy happens, and they will go out of their ways in a crazy way to find a legal loophole that the person didn't do it ladas knowingly. They went meshuga, in other words, they went crazy, and therefore they killed themselves. So practically speaking, in today's world, the concept of a person who commits suicide, you know, is not considered a person who's not going to, you can bury them, you can shiva, you can have the whole thing. There's an interesting question though, asked in halacha. Okay? And this is discussed in halacha and in a lot of different places. It's an interesting philosophical question. The concept of mesada. If somebody knows they're going to be got killed by goyim, they're going to get killed. They're coming. They're going to get you. Are you allowed to kill yourself? Or is another Jew allowed to be told, kill me, because I don't want to die in the hand of the goyim? No. Okay? Which basically would happen by Masada. They all killed each other because they didn't want to get killed by the goyim. So there's a lot of interesting proofs to this, both ways, by the way. There's a story in Tanakh, when Shaul HaMelech was finally killed by the Plishtim, the Plishtim were coming, the Philistines were coming to kill him. Shaul told his servant, I want you to kill me because I don't want to be killed by them. I don't want the goyim to kill me. I don't want to give them the satisfaction that they killed me. And his servant said, Your Majesty, I'm not doing it. I mean, I'm not going to kill you. Forget it. So the pasuk says Shaul took his sword, put it on the ground with the sharp side up, and he fell on the sword and he killed himself. Which seemingly seems to prove, if Shaul HaMelech was a great tzaddik, that would prove in a certain way that he would be allowed to do it. Page 40, by the way. Hello? Yeah. He would be allowed to do it, but most opinions, by the way, say you're not allowed to do it. Why? They Shaul HaMelech was a different story, whatever they answer why he was able to do it. But they say, you don't know 100% sure that they're going to come to kill you. In this forum, they talk about this thing. They say, there are a lot of stories that the goyim were coming, the last minute, and they're about to kill the Jews, and all of a sudden, same thing happened, they all ran away. For whatever reason it is, and the Jews weren't killed. And now if they killed themselves, they would have all been dead. And now, so how do you know the goyim are going to kill you? There's no certainty 100% that the goyim are going to kill you. If there's no certainty, then you don't have a right to be killed. Because Shaul HaMelech knew for sure they were going to kill him. There was no way out. So, because he was the king, of course they're going to kill him. What?
What about the Jews in Masada?
Masada is a big halachic issue if they're allowed to do it or not. A lot of authorities in halacha say they were not allowed to do what they did. Nobody's blaming them, by the way. We shouldn't be tested in that. But the question was, if they asked the halachic question at that time, are we allowed to kill ourselves not to be killed by the goyim? It's a big argument in the codifiers. A lot of codifiers, a lot of poskim say, no, you're not allowed to do it. You're not allowed to do it.
because then you, because like, who is the rabbi? You always said Gamzu Letova, and then they.
Nochem is Gamzu.
Yeah, they were going to say, go kill him. And then in the last second, Eliyahu Navi appeared.
Right, and he changed them.
Last second, you don't know what's
going to
happen.
Correct. But the pasuk over here said, but there's a very interesting halachic, I mean, it's philosophically, you know. Question is, is it morally right or wrong to do it? For one to kill himself. But there's another interesting thing in the pasuk. When the pasuk says over here, and then the pasuk vav, ki betzalem alokim osa sa'odam, because God, the man was made in the image of God, right? So some commentaries explain what's the pasuk saying over here. Somebody might think, if A killed B, yeah, okay, B is dead. Why should I kill A? A is also in the image of God. Why am I killing another image of God? So the Torah over here says, no, I'm going to make sure that guy gets killed. Meaning, don't think that because the person, the murderer, is in the image of God, and therefore you should save him. No, the Torah says he murdered somebody, he's going to get killed. If there's witnesses, the court will kill him. If not, I'll kill him. What?
How many, so when someone, God forbid, committed suicide, when did they change that you can bury him?
It's not that they changed. They just said the person went nuts. Ma'abed
asked, like, was there a time where, God forbid, like someone committed suicide?
I don't know. I don't know. But then people were normal. Now they're crazy. Everybody's crazy. So a guy kills himself. It's crazy. I had once a story in my earlier years in the rabbinate that was this, it happened to be a Chicago family. That's how they got to me. They lived in L.A., but I didn't know them. They knew my father very well. So my father was still alive then. So it was a long time ago. It was probably 25 years ago. The son died. Whatever he did, whatever it was. And when the father heard it, he killed himself. I ended up doing a double funeral of a father and son, and double unveiling the same day. Okay. So, the son died from whatever, I think maybe, OD. I don't know what he did. OD maybe, what he died. And then the father went crazy, so he killed himself. Now nobody's gonna say the father did it in a normal state of mind. Okay, so you're going to tell me this is called Ma'abed Atzmo Ladas, that he's committing suicide knowingly? He went off the deep end. Okay. A guy is afraid that they're going to come and lock him up for life without parole, yeah? A guy, you know how many people committed suicide in jail? People commit suicide. They try to, they do. You're not going to say they're on the normal frame of mind. So yeah, they try to find any time, financial problem, whatever it may be, they'll try to go out of the way. Cause listen, a Jew needs a burial. He needs the Kaddish. He needs Shiva. He needs. Okay, so halacha will do whatever they can within the framework of halacha to be lenient. This is a case where you try to be lenient, not strict, and that's what they need to do.
Oh.
What?
If someone, because I think recently there was this story in Israel, the lady whose son was a Jewish astronaut who perished,
right,
25 years ago, and then, is it true that she requested to be burned?
Yeah, but you don't do it.
Oh, yeah, and then there was. So the Rabbanim decided, even though it was her will and her request, you go against it because...
When a person... Okay, this is all part of this thing, so it's not even going off really, because we're going to get into this anyway. We do not belong to ourselves. We are loan. When we're born, God says, I'm lending you to yourself for 120 years, but I want you to know you're mine. I'm lending it to you. Okay? You have to give it back to me in the same state that you, not the same age, by the way, but you have to give it back the same state that you got it in. Yes? Therefore, halachically, you don't listen to a patient when they are going against the Torah. According to Allah, I'm not speaking now civil system gets sued. I'm not talking about that. If a person willed in their will to be cremated, okay, that, according to Allah, you don't listen to it. The only problem is, legally today you have an issue because the authority, legally, I mean, you're not going to fight the world with court. You know, you'll end up in jail. But halachically, you have to do everything possible to change the cremation. Even if it means going against the person's will. And sometimes in medical issues, a person needs treatment, or they need to be fed, and the person doesn't want to. Sometimes halacha says you force feed them. In the laws of Yom Kippur, there's a clear din. If doctors said a guy's not allowed to fast, he's not allowed to fast, he has to eat. And the guy says, no, I'm refusing to eat. So you don't say, okay, you don't want to eat, go, you'll die, big deal. Torah says in Shechun Aruch, from the Gemara, two people force his mouth open, it might not work literally, but figuratively, you force feed the person because Torah says you have to eat. What do you mean you don't want to eat? You're not the boss of yourself. So it's all Indian, I don't want to get into it now. With the woman's right, with abortions and all that, according to Torah, it's not their body. It's garbage. We can, my body, I could do with my body whatever I want. It's not your body. Your body is on loan to you. It's Hashem's body. You can't just do whatever you want with your own body. So all these things that Torah says, so if a person will to be cremated, Halacha says you don't listen. Again, legally, you don't want a whole different story. What?
Does that apply to getting tattooed?
What?
Since it's not your body.
You can't do a tattoo. It's not your
body. Well, you can't get a tattoo because the Torah says you can't get a tattoo.
But still, it's like the body. Your body.
What? Yeah, because you're hurting your body. Well, that's not the real reason, by the way. The real reason the Torah says you can't do tattoos because that's what the Goyim used to do. It was the Goyish, it's called the statutes of the Goyim, Chukas HaGoy, that a Jew is not allowed to follow.
So why do the ladies get tattooed?
Who said they do?
They get their eyebrows tattooed.
It's not so simple.
What about
piercings? Halachically, it's not allowed.
What about piercings?
No. Piercings, it depends. There's a whole question in halacha about girls piercing their ears. So the Rebbe has a letter on it. It's discussed in halacha. The answer is because the pain, the gain outweighs the pain. In other words, it takes a second. You're not hurting the person on a permanent basis. It's a temporary pain, and the gain of having the earrings is much greater. But a person does not own their body, not while they're alive, not while they're dead. And therefore, a person can't say, it's my body, I want to kill myself. If you go with the attitude that it's my body, I could do with my body whatever I want, then everybody would be able to kill themselves. Can have a Jim Jones massacre again. What?
I'm not sure if it's related. So let's say like it happens that a person is buried a certain place and then their children, whatever, decide they want it after years, they want to go to Israel or this or that. Is that also kind of like going?
Well, under certain circumstances, you're allowed to do it.
But what if like they didn't have really permission from the parent or whoever it is? Is that like, also, like,
you have to be more specific in your question.
Like, how far does it go? Like, a person left this world already, and then someone makes a decision for that person, so to speak.
Yeah.
That they for whatever reason, maybe they're going to move to Israel, they feel they want their parents near them, or whatever. Like, how does that work? Like, is it so easy to do that? Like, to
Does the person have the authority? The question is, somebody dies and somebody decides where to bury them. Do they have a right to do that? Maybe the parents, but
if they're executor, I mean legally, if they're executor, I think they probably.
Yeah, but what happens if you find out?
I understand.
What happens if you find out after the fact the parents wanted to be buried in a certain place and you didn't know that, then they decided to be buried in one place. So there is a din. Normally, you don't move bodies. Piniat Samas is called. But under certain circumstances, you're allowed to. For instance, sometimes people bury people on conditions. We had somebody in the show was buried temporarily here, but they said in a year or so, we're going to move them to Israel. And they did. They moved them to Israel after a year or two. They moved them to Israel because that was the condition. When they buried, they... there's one story with the Friedrich Rebbe's mother. The Friedrich Rebbe was in Chicago and he wasn't there at the funeral and the Rebbe made a decision where to be buried, but he made it on the condition that if the Friedrich Rebbe comes and he doesn't want it, they'll be able to change it. You could bury on conditions. But even then, you don't move right away, you move after the meat becomes,
you have to sit shiva
for an hour, whatever. You have to, a little bit. I mean, there's a lot of dinim involved, but you don't, I know we're talking about dead people, but what happens, somebody is buried somewhere, and nobody goes visits, and the family decides, you know what, nobody goes there to visit, nobody lives there anymore, let's move the person to a different city. You're not allowed to move it just for that reason. Moving a dead body is a very severe thing. If you're just a family plot, you create a family plot, then you're allowed to move somebody to a family plot. If they want to be buried in Israel, you can move them to Israel. I mean, there's a lot of...
Well, here they're burying coffins there, you get in the shroud.
I understand. Well, in New York, they also take them out of the coffin, put them in the ground with the coffin going over it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Certain places here also, but yeah. They have they make now coffins that have a removable bottom. It's made in a way that you
it's
can
like
remove
a magician's
it.
Door.
Huh? A what?
It's yes. Like a magician's door.
A magician's door, yeah. But this is not magic. They make, and then they put in the person, and then they actually take out the bottom, and the person's actually touching on the ground. And then the coffin is on top of them.
So it's three-sided.
Correct. It's four-sided originally.
Then
they remove one side and put it next to the coffin, and the coffin, so the person is actually on the ground, in shrouds, and the talus.
And that's the correct way?
That's the real way of doing it. But today, the real way, I mean, you do it with coffin, you can't do it. But they sometimes make holes under the at the bottom of the coffin that the person's considered.
It's all in the cement thing.
No, but cement is earth.
Cement is earth. Considered earth.
It is. Cement is earth. So there's white things in California that you have to use.
Yeah.
It's not really a problem. Even now they're changing the law that you don't need those white things if you don't want. Whatever. Anyway, coming back to this whole thing. So Hashem basically is saying over here, don't kill anybody, don't kill yourself. Even if there's no witnesses, Hashem said, I'm going to definitely make it happen. You know, I'm gonna, but the whole question which we mentioned about, you know, it can, somebody kill themselves if they're going to be killed by the goyim anyway. We said there's really, in fact, he brings out the Das Kanim. Incidents are recorded where during periods of Jewish problems, parents would even slaughter their own children rather than let them fall in the hands of the goyim. That's the Das Kanim Melatesis says, which I don't have right here now, but that's what he says.
Israel and Babylon.
Yeah, but again, it's a big halacha question with Masada. I told you, not everybody agrees with it. The reason why they would be allowed to is a proof from Shaul HaMelech, and a lot of codifiers negate that proof, and they say it's a different story there, and like this, you can't do it. Okay. But a person is created in the image of God. Now, what does it mean when you say a person is created in the image of Hashem? Yeah, let's spend a few minutes talking about this. People are created vertical. We stand up. The head is on top, then the heart, and then the feet. Right? There's a system. Animals, which go on four, are basically the head and the rest of the body is on the same level. Okay? Now that's called not in the image of Hashem. Because in the image of Hashem, which is basically the ten spheres, the human body, whether Jew or non-Jew, by the way, is created in the image of God. Not only the neshama, the body of a human being is created in the image of God. Why? Because if you ever see Kabbalah pictures, Chochma Bina and Das Chabad is the intellectual level, correct? And then you have the body. If you say Pasach Leo, it says, Chesed is the right hand, Gvura is the left hand. Tefer is Gufa. The body is the middle. You know, there's the three pillars that the world stands on. So, intellect is on top of emotions, like it is in the ten spheres. Chochma, Bina, and Das, and then you have the seven Midas. So, intellect is on top of the emotions. So, therefore, by a person, the head is on top of the body. Now, just say by God, in the spheres, in the emanations of godliness, there's right, left, and center. The human body has right, left, and center. Right, left, center, right, left, center. The higher part of the body and the lower part of the body. There's right, left, center. So that means a person was created in the image of God. Unlike animals, that intellect and emotions, the heart, are all on the same level. Because in the image of God, intellect is above everything else.
Abba?
Yeah.
So how does that differ than what we find out with Adam when he was born? Like,
he wasn't born.
Or
created.
Okay, or created. Like, how does that... I mean, was he not in the image of God?
Like, he was.
Like it's here written, or is there a different purpose?
Well, in Bereishis it also says about Adam that he was in Tzelem, the Tzelem Elokim.
So is it the same idea, or is it?
It's the same idea. Same idea. Vayivra Elokim es Adam b'tzalmei b'tzelem Elokim bara oisei. He created in the image of God. Now, what does it mean he created in the image of God? Like we said. Right, left, center.
Same
thing.
So what's the purpose of saying it again?
But now he's telling it to Noach as a... Why am I very opposed to murder? Hashem said, why am I opposed to murder? Because by killing a person, you're killing God. And therefore, there's an interesting din that we learned in a few parshas ago. When Beis Din killed somebody, they would hang him up, but it said you can't leave him hang overnight. Okay? They hung him up, and they took him down. Why? Because there's kikilas alakem toli. And the Medrash Rashi brings down. There's the analogy, a king had a twin brother, identical twin. A king had an identical twin who was a bum, a murderer, a terrible human being. The king's brother was caught committing a crime, so they had to kill him. It was a punishable by death crime. The guy's going to be hanging on the gallows. When everybody looks at him, they see the king. So out of respect to the king, they wouldn't let the guy hang a long time. They would hang him, kill him, and take him down right away. Because people are saying, look at the king's being hung. So, the same thing with Hashem. Every person is created in the image of Hashem. Right? And therefore, in fact, not only are you not allowed to leave him overnight, you know, hanging on a gallows, but you're not allowed to leave a dead body overnight if possible. You know, you're supposed to bury them as soon as possible. Why? Because in the image of God, you don't leave a person just laying there. you know, without burial as soon as possible. And therefore, the Midrash says, because a person is created in the image of Hashem, whoever kills a person is like, God forbid, killing the divine likeness.
How did the Goyim go so far away from this concept?
You know, of what?
You know, do it immediately. You know, they wait a week, they leave them out, they show them. It's
show and tell.
It's you know, because they have some belief in the Old Testament and some of the values. It's so far different.
There's not the only thing they have different. I mean,
I understand.
Everything, they don't keep Shabbos, they don't keep kosher, they don't keep any. I mean, like, what's the difference? They don't keep this either.
Rabbi, if you're not, kind of maybe a stupid question, but it's still worth asking.
So there's no such thing as a stupid question. I'm sure you heard that already. What?
If you don't delay the burial.
Right.
How come sometimes you wait till the next day, like... So I know it's ridiculous to do it if it has to be like, let's say, at 11 p.m. at 9.
You have to do it tahara. There's
things. First of all, in Israel, and in many places in New York, they do burials at night, 11, 12 o'clock. In Israel, they do burials at night.
My dad was buried at
night. Yeah, they always bury at night.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
In Yerushalayim,
especially because in Yerushalayim you're not allowed to leave a body overnight. Besides, in Yerushalayim, you're not allowed to leave a body overnight, unless there's mamish no choice. But otherwise, they don't. You could wait a little bit if relatives come; it'll be more, you know, respectful for the person. They'll have more people there. But the truth of the matter is, they bury right away. Even Williamsburg, those places, somebody dies. They have their own cemeteries. They will bury. Somebody dies 5 o'clock in the afternoon. They'll get it ready to go and they'll bury it to 10, 11 o'clock at night.
Also, that wasn't such a stupid question, I guess, after
all. No.
I told you there's no such thing as a stupid question. Just stupid. There's no such thing as a stupid question, just stupid people.
Not asking the question would have been stupid.
His question was, I think, why some people then wait 2-3 days for...
I said the reason why some people wait halachically and it's allowed, because you want relatives to come.
Isn't that painful for the neshama?
I had a shaila this week, okay? Somebody passed away Friday noontime in New York. Okay, but they have family here, they have family all around the world. So the guys in New York, the Chevra Kadisha said, we can bury them today. It's a Chabad family. But the kids were in different countries, and they said, you know what? We want to come. So they pushed it off until Sunday. Now, Shabbos, you can't bury, obviously. But over there was for the kids to come and for family to come. That's a different story. Some people say, no, don't wait for the family, just bury them right away. Well, my mother-in-law passed away even in New York. Mm-hmm. So she had a daughter in South Africa. Okay, you had to come right away. And the Chevra Kadisha in New York said, listen, we want to do the Levaya right away. If you get it off to tell us to wait, we'll wait. So I told them they should wait. Because they know the family, the dynamics, and she would definitely want them been there.
In Yerushalayim, somebody passed away Friday afternoon, 1 o'clock. Shabbos is 6.
They bury it before Shabbos.
Wow.
Huh?
Let's say one day, but if you don't have to wait, you actually do. Okay.
If there's no relative to this, you bury right away. There's a chassid, Michal Dvorkin. You know the nigen, yet, yet, nikava, that nigen? Okay. He was the chassid that was singing that song when he heard that the previous Rebbe was released from prison in 1927. He had a bottle of mashke, he was dancing on the table, that there's nobody but God. That chassid passed away Erev Shavuos, in the afternoon, in New York, before the previous Rebbe passed away, a year before. He's buried mamish by the oil over there. He passed away, his name is Michal Dvorkin, he passed away Erev Shavuos, in the afternoon. And it was a 2-day Yom Tov, so you know, it's a long time to keep a body. So the Rebbe was pushing that they should make the Levaya that day. The problem is, they needed the doctors to sign the death certificate. Okay, so there was a chassid, a doctor, and our Rebbe came to him. The filik was still there, but the Rebbe didn't want the previous Rebbe to know. He found out anyway, but the Rebbe didn't want his father-in-law to know that the chassid passed away. And the Rebbe was trying to get a doctor to sign the death certificate. But legally, if you're not the patient's doctor and you sign a death certificate, you lose your license. You know that. So he came over to this chassidic doctor, and the Rebbe asked him to sign. He said, I can't. The Rebbe promised him, Ime b'mechitasi. The Rebbe promised him, you'll be with me in Gan Eden. And the Rebbe wrote a piece of paper to him, you'll be with me in Gan Eden if you sign the death certificate.
Yeah.
He signed the death certificate. They buried him mamish right before she was. They walked back from the cemetery.
Oh my God.
They had to walk back from the cemetery. And Lepel, the Rebbe that night already says, where's Michal Dvorkin? I mean, he knew already. He got, whatever. So they told him. But under all circumstances, you do it ASAP. No, he didn't have, probably didn't have one. You know.
Does it make any difference?